Hey everyone, so I am back. This is Lead Her Shift, and we are about to talk to just another dynamic woman. We've been talking to a sequence of different women, but this one is extremely important. Why? Because we're going to be going in and delving into human resources. That's her expertise. That's what we'll be kind of starting off with, and it will give us another perspective of someone who's actually in the role of HR, working in the space with different leaders from around the globe. And that's Kim. Hi, Kim. How are you doing?
I am good. How are you?
I am good. So I saw that. So I'm going to just literally jump into it. No. I saw that you kind of describe yourself as self-made HR professional. And I thought that was so interesting, right? So right. Can you talk to me about that? Where did that come from? Why would you term self-made HR professional? What's that all about? Yes.
So I always say that either HR found me or I found HR.
Okay.
But for some reason, I have always been interested in HR, even before I knew all of the different aspects of HR. And that's from a very young age, maybe about 11 or 12. And back then, HR to me was more about helping people. That's all I knew about HR, is that you're in a position to help people, to meet people, to engage with people. So I delved into it a bit more. I asked questions. I spoke to professionals. Then in one of my second jobs, I sort of convinced my then boss that we needed an HR function.
Right.
And I said, I spoke to him about, you know, what HR meant to me, how I viewed HR. And he said, okay, fine, no problem. And so for me, it started there. Then I went into completing a certificate in HR. Then I moved into a diploma. Then I moved into a degree.
Well-educated young lady.
Yes. And even all of that whilst at work. So I never left.
Okay, nice.
I did everything correspondence. And then from there, I moved on into an MBA, still specializing in HR, because for some reason, there was something that connected me to the HR function. Something, it was a passion, a deep passion that I needed to fulfill. So I was hungry for it. I was hungry to fulfill that mission of being in HR.
Wow.
And so the reason I say self-made is because everything I now know about HR, I found out from studying. I found out not because I had a coach and a mentor. And I think now maybe persons, you know, it's a reality for most persons to have a mentor. But back then, it was just me. It was just me being hungry to be in a position of HR because of what it meant to me. It was about the connection that I felt with that particular profession. And, you know, even now I look back at my career. I look back at where I came from, plotting the dots. And I'm saying that to me was one of the purpose of my life,
right?
Because that not only changed, you know, for me personally, but for me professionally as a leader,
right?
Because in that profession, you're changing lives, you're serving others. And as much as in that profession, you have to be able to establish a level of equilibrium in the needs of the company. And the needs of the staff. So you're almost trying to achieve synergies between the two.
Mm-hmm.
But it to me, it's such a beautiful position because you're serving, right? And it sort of dovetails into being a leader or leadership, because you're changing lives. You're affecting people in a positive way. And for me, and I always say, if you're somebody who's interested in HR, it has to come. You have to have that personality for it as well. You know, it's not just about the theoretical aspect of HR, right? But almost who you are. You know, who you are as a person, your character must sink into that position. If you know what I'm speaking about.
Yeah. But so you know, for those out there who might be listening and, you know, always hear about HR, whether they're employees who have an HR department or, you know, they're entrepreneurs who are aware of HR as a function, but not necessarily have it in their businesses yet, or those medium companies who are now starting to kind of establish that, like, what's that concept like? Because, you know, typically you would hear persons, you know, think, well, you know, that's the person that hires someone and fires someone.
And, you know? and this to me is a misconception, right?
Right.
So for me, and let me, so, and I'm happy you asked that question, because most people, persons who maybe have met or persons who have heard speak about HR, sometimes when I hear the definition of HR, I almost sink on the inside, right?
Yeah.
Because HR is not just about hiring and firing, you know?
Right.
You look at HR like this monster, like, oh my gosh, if you're called into the HR office.
It's like, freaking, like.
you're going to get a pink slip.
Yeah.
But HR is so much more than that. It's all encompassing. HR is at the center of everything that happens in a company. And so HR is at the center of everything, because HR has to, one, understand the needs of the company, the vision, the mission. And HR has to understand the talent around and how you connect the talent, the people with that vision. Without that, Elian, it's almost impossible in a way to fulfill your exact mission, because though as leaders, we at the, you know, we at the helm and we craft out what the vision should be or the mission or the objectives, the leaders are not the one implementing.
Right.
Those who are implementing are the team members.
Right.
Those on the front line who have to meet the customers, who have to speak to them, they are the ones who are really achieving that vision for you. And the reason I'm so passionate about that is because I was able to achieve it. And that's why I also say self-made.
Right.
Because when there's this one company I started with. And when I came, I said to my boss then, I'm like, what is your vision for this company? Right? I should not just be somebody who, you know, comes in and then I have a job description and it says, okay, well, to just come, you know, draft a policy or to review a policy. I want to be able to make meaningful change that you will see and that you will feel. But I need to understand what your vision is. Right? And without understanding that, what the vision is of the company, HR is not really able to fulfill its actual purpose in that company, because HR has to understand what it is and work with the people to realize it, to see what it is, to change the culture, which is critical, to adapt to the vision, and to then implement. And so there are so many different aspects of HR. For instance, one of them, so an example I will give, if, for instance, company A's vision is to ensure to create a customer-centric environment.
Right.
If we have to ensure that this thing is a reality, we have to start with, okay, our recruitment or our talent strategy. Right? Who are we recruiting? What are the personalities we're looking for? What are the the attributes, the characteristics? Who are those people? Right? And HR has to understand this critically to be able to get the right people to achieve that vision, right? And so that's one strategy. Another one could be your manpower, your resource planning. If, again, the company's vision is to be customer-centric, the current manpower that exists, can they fulfill that?
Right. Right.
And you train them to be that. And if you cannot train them to be that, then what can we do? What plan we put it in place to ensure that the people that we have currently can fulfill that vision?
Yeah.
Right? And there are so many aspects. There, you know, there is a culture strategy. There is the reward strategy for form. There's so many aspects of HR. And I love speaking about it because it's my passion.
You can tell. You can tell. It's my honestly passion. But it's like one of those things, because, you know, I think generally when you are either growing a business, building a business, or in the deep neck of a Fortune 500 company, oftentimes HR kinds of comes off as like this admin type role.
You know, yes.
And and also I think it's so interesting what you said in terms of aligning the vision with essentially the talent and understanding the personalities. Exactly. Because we often, I think one of the misconceptions as well that you have of human resource professionals is that their role is to hire for the particular tasks that are to be done, mm-hmm. as opposed to also considering the personality type who's going to come in and
correct.
Affect or adjust or completely transform the culture. And it correct. Has to be kind of aligned both talent-wise in terms of the skills, the abilities of this individual, but also aligning that with their who they are as a person, not just exactly. their skill, you know?
And that's critical, right? Because, and that's where a lot of companies go wrong, that we yeah. hire, you know, we hire just for the task, yeah. right? And I always say we can train somebody to get a task done, but we cannot train them to have the right personality.
Personality, that's okay? it.
And that's why you have to start from the very beginning. Of the people who you bring, because what you will find is that you spend thousands of dollars and you waste months of training the wrong person because the person has the wrong personality for the job.
Yeah.
And that's important.
That is so powerful, you know, because I feel like many, I try to speak to as many HR professionals as possible, but I also feel like many don't necessarily get it, but also they're kind of forced to not model that because of the culture of the company anyway. So
let me add on that. It's interesting that you brought that point up. Mm-hmm. So remember I said earlier on, the person in the role of HR must have the right personality.
Right.
Must also be very dynamic.
Right.
Because there are leaders or persons who you work with, maybe your other executive colleagues or the CEO, who really do not necessarily believe in HR.
Right.
Who believe that HR is just administrative, and so you just have to be a paper pusher, you have to go, you know, you have to schedule leave, and this is not HR.
Yeah.
When we speak HR, this has nothing to do with HR. This is just one aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And more the tactical administrative side, because every function has an administrative side.
Sorry, I was just about to say that.
Yeah, but HR is at the center of everything. And so if somebody is serious, so for persons who are listening, if there are persons who are serious about being a serious HR manager, if you don't have the personality, you have to try to find the personality, because mm-hmm. there will be persons who, one will either, because of their personality type, may not listen to what you have to say.
Yeah.
May just think, well, okay, why are you saying those things? Because you're administrative, right?
Yeah.
And so that person has to be dynamic. That person has to be at that executive table to not just take decisions, make decisions, and get people to understand their role in the company and to take them seriously. And so when
sure.
I look at persons who are part of, you know, the professional, the HR professional realm, I see persons who are in a function, an HR function, but those persons do not have the personality to make meaningful change because
right.
of their personality. You have to be a strong person as an HR professional. You
yeah.
have to be dynamic. You have to be able to command respect and attention.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's the thing, because I don't know if you may be familiar with or not, but there's the assessment tool called DISC.
Yes.
And I find that generally, or it's my perception that generally HR professionals should kind of have a balance of all four personality types, in mm-hmm. the sense mm-hmm. that there must be a point where you are dominant. You are, you know, a bit more assertive. You are a bit more tactful about what you say, how you say it, you push
yes.
for a particular agenda yes. and you kind of get that point across. But then there are times when you need to be a little more compliant, where you
all
know
right. you're right,
you know, right. you're a little more
to be able to embrace
yeah
I mean,
and know
changing.
How to shift based on the circumstance. Yeah,
you're not changing, you're not necessarily changing who the person is, but the person needs to be able to change to be able to suit what is required.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So, and as you were saying, there are times when For instance, I will be that person with that deep personality,
yeah,
who says to my boss, no, this is not right. No, yes, this is not how we tackle this. This is what we should do. But I'm also the other person who, depending on the situation, would be a bit more steady and say, okay, yes, well, understand. You know that sort of thing?
Yeah, just let's get it done, you know, just take our time. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Because you're also, you know, and so that's the reason I also love the concept of John Maxwell, which is the velvet-covered brick.
Yeah.
Right? Because that leader makes difficult decisions, right? Right. Maintains his or her position regarding policies, processes, and the need for quality. But at the same time, this leader is also the velvet that is open to ideas, encourages feedback, listens to problems, finds solutions. So you have this velvet covered brick. That brick is beneath. So my standards are going to be that. And this is what I expect. But at the back of that, I'm also this kind of person you can come and speak to because the outside is soft. That velvet is nice and soft.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You open, you can, you have a you want to have a discussion about something that's affecting you. You come to speak to me, we engage, we connect, and we find a solution.
Right.
And that's why I love the concept of a velvet covered brick.
Because I love you're that. Not
compromising your standards. No, the standards are what it should be. But I am a person just like you are a person. I'm understanding, I'm compassionate, I'm kind, I'm generous, and I want to help you.
That's right? Amazing, Kim. This that's amazing. Yeah.
Yes,
that's totally amazing. So what's your thoughts on, you know, I'm going to be a little controversial here for a second and, you know, throw this at you. Oftentimes in the HR space, and this is a global thing I've seen, you know, where HR is primarily women, you know, and, you know, it's that role that men are often as involved in. They are some, but they're not the majority, you know. What do you think that is? Like, what's that about?
You know,
about?
I can talk also say that. Let me tell you, I can also say that for a number of other roles.
Right.
So like engineers, predominantly
assigned
men.
Yeah, and it's flipped. Yeah.
So in every position you have, you depending on what it is, you find the majority are women and the majority are men. Mm-hmm. But I haven't really thought, like gone into that, but just from what your question, I think I might be wrong, but I think men tend to think that possibly similar to being a nurse, right? Yeah. Men see that profession as more like a nurturing, like being in a nurturing position,
right?
Being more in a so you might see it as somebody who is very motherly,
right?
So similar to being a nurse, because I have spoken to persons who have indicated that, you know, and that's men, right? When they were growing up, they always wanted to be that. But then as they grew up, somehow there became this sort of stereotypical view that if you're a male and you're a nurse, it means that there is something wrong with you.
Wrong.
Right? And I think it might be similar with HR. Like, they see HR as a nurturing kind of profession.
Right.
And a lot of masculine men, I guess, see something wrong with that, because for them, you know, and again, from the days of our parents, grandparents, great-grand, women have a particular role.
Right.
And men have a particular role.
It's more that kind of traditional...
Correct.
Mindset, yeah.
Mm. Exactly. And for me, it might just be a mindset thing.
Yeah.
But if you're in HR, it means that you're more on a nurturing sort of spectrum, as opposed to being an engineer or an accountant, right? So I might be wrong, but it's just my view on what I think.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I feel like I need to do a poll. Like, I'm so curious about that specifically. But tell me a little bit more about Kim pre-HR. You know, you've gone through kind of this journey of, you know, being engulfed in this career and being on this path of kind of wanting to serve others in this way. But tell me a little bit about what did life look like when HR wasn't really a thing.
Let me tell you something. To be quite honest, I can't recall this length of time or period of time where it wasn't about HR for me, right? For as long as I can remember, even growing up, and as I said before, like I was so determined. And I remember a couple of years ago, I had a strategic meeting with some of my managers. And then we had to put this sort of blank sheet on your back, on each other's back, right? And then everybody wrote how they saw you.
Right.
And three out of those comments were determined. Those were the comments.
Wow.
And that has always been my personality, that from as long as I can remember, I have always been this determined person. I'll give you one example. I've never really shared that. but I'm sharing it with you just to give you a little idea of Kim, right? So back then I was at A-level. And the other dream job for me was to be an air hostess.
Oh, right? Nice.
Mm. For some reason, again, I just loved how they looked, how, you know, how they positioned themselves, how they dressed, right? Attending to people. I'm like, I really, really would just like to know what it would be just, you know, to be an air hostess, like just to be there. I'm like, how do I do that? So I remember I was home and I called American Airlines. Somebody answered. I said, I'm just calling to find out whether there are any positions available. Just part time because I'm going to school. And she said, no, we have no positions available. I'm like, In my mind, I would not stop there.
Right.
So I stayed there. I thought about it. Then 30 minutes, I picked up the phone again and I asked to speak to the general manager.
Right.
And she said, okay. She put me on and I said the same thing to him. I said, you know, I'm going to school, but I wouldn't mind just finding a part-time job at the airport. Just, you know, I explained to him why. And he said, well, we really have no positions available. So I said, okay, can I come down to see you? I was almost taken aback, right? So he said, okay, you know, like a little ambivalent because he already said that there are no positions, there are right? So I went down, dressed and everything. It took me like about 45 minutes to get there. I still went and I sat down with him. And in that interview, when we were done, he said to me, I have never, ever been in a position where I'm having an interview with someone and this person is interviewing me. He said, it has never happened to me. And I was asking him a question. So I think he was really thrilled. Do you know he gave me the position, the part-time position?
That is amazing.
I landed the position because I was just so determined. And my whole life has been that way. Like, if there is something that I really want, and the thing is, Elliot, even if, you know, somebody says no to me, like it's not possible, in my mind, it is possible. There is some way. Even if today didn't work out, then maybe it's going to work out in the next week or the next month. But for me, and it's again, I guess, having faith and belief.
Right.
That, you know, whatever you want, if you believe it, it's going to happen, eventually it will.
It will. That's
and
it true.
And that has been my story, my life. Even when I did my, when I applied to do my, my master's, and I was still working, and it was a lot. But I convinced myself that it was that important that I finished it. It was that important that I got my master's and I did it.
Yeah.
And I know you may ask me that later on, but I will just go ahead and say it. If there is one thing that I can say to persons out there, it's to never, ever give up. Never ever, if there is something that you're passionate about and something that you want to do and you always wanted to do, it may not work out today, it may not work out tomorrow, but eventually it will work out. Because to me, everybody has a journey. Our journeys are all different, right?
And also, it might not even work out how you expect it to. It might even be better than you even imagine, you know?
Exactly. And that's the thing, I think, for most professionals. we get caught up in the disappointment. We get caught up in the fact that something has not worked out. And so, like you rightly said, it may not have worked out like you wanted it to, but it will work out eventually. You just never give up. Never, ever give up. Like I didn't give up on this position.
Listen, I mean, that's another level of determination there, you know? Because a lot of people, I think one of the things I got from that as well is that even as young people or even older people tend to take the first answer as gospel. And they don't question the first answer. So sometimes the first answer might be no. Sometimes the first answer might be maybe. Sometimes the first answer will be like, I'll get back to you. But we take it and we, in some ways, we make that answer, if it isn't yes, a negative.
Correct.
And we hold on to that negative, not realizing that there's so much things that could be happening in that person's day, in that person's life, that might just be hindering that progress for now.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Exactly.
So, Kim, you've been in this HR space over the past 14 years or so, and or more. And I know you've seen a lot. You've worked with different entities, and I know you've seen a lot. What would be the one thing you would say if an employer could shift one thing either in their culture or in the company in general to serve their teams? What's one thing you think is missing in some of these companies?
One of the main things, I'm not sure if people have realized it, but it's to treat your employees like individuals and not as a statistic. That is so critical. So yes, we spoke earlier on about companies, you know, ensuring that or realizing that HR is critical to ensuring that their vision is materialized through their people. That's one aspect. But we need to go back to basics.
We need to
treat people, employees, like individuals first before we treat them. There's a difference. There's the employee and there's the individual. The individual comes first. The individual is who that person is.
Right.
Before that task and before that assignment. It's who, treat them like individuals. Treat them like they're people.
Yeah.
Like you care about them. And if we have to go back to basics, you know, as people, we want to know that we're important. We want to know that people care about us. We want to know that we mean something, that we're of value, right? And I find a lot of companies treat the employees like statistics. So you hear the comments that, you know, this person is not indispensable, you know, I can just replace that person into
work.
And so if she goes, you know, I can get, and you know, we're missing the point because this person is leaving with all of the knowledge, with all of the experience, with everything that you have trained, and then you're going to bring somebody else and have to do that all over again. Meanwhile, you're losing so much in that time frame because you're starting all over.
Yeah.
So companies need to learn and need to go back to basics and treat their employees like individuals. Show them that they're important. Show them that you care. And you know, this goes such a long way. You know, once your employees feel this warmth, this touch, that they go a very long way.
Yeah.
And when you need them to perform beyond what is normal, maybe to assist with a critical project or something, when your employees feel that they're truly aligned with you, they do so much.
They go above and beyond.
They follow wherever you lead. Sometimes they're not even asking questions.
Right?
And I think if companies just understood that and acted in that way, that people are important, right? And they not just say it, but they show their team members that they are important. And I have realized it. I have, and the reason I'm saying that, because I know it. I know that if you treat your employees the right way, there is nothing you will ask them to do that they won't do. And that's I can say that it's a fact.
And that's the thing, because I think we forget that in hiring in a particular role, that is a human being in that role, a human Correct. Being with feelings, with emotions. You know, we need to kind of show a level of empathy in different situations. But do you think generally, because I've spoken to a lot of executive leaders, I've coached them, I've done consultations in different companies, and
yeah.
oftentimes, depending on the personality of the leader, there's this misconception that, you know, they're in the role of leadership, so why is leadership development important, you know? So my question to you would be is how critical do you think getting continuous, consistent leadership development is for any particular company?
Oh, let me tell you, the concept of let me tell you, this is so multifaceted. Like maybe we'll be speaking for hours because there's so many aspects to it, right? Leadership to, you know, leadership is such a beautiful thing, Alien. Like it's a unique and fortunate position to be
right. in
because you're yeah. changing lives.
Yeah.
You're making a difference. Right. So yes, it's also about achieving the right level of equilibrium, like I mentioned before. But the one amazing thing is that you're there to help others be the right. best version of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one of the quintessential things that leaders need to understand is that you're really there to help somebody. You're not there to serve your needs. You're there to serve the needs of everybody else.
That's the thing.
And you're there mm-hmm. to help people be the best version of who they are, right? But you also need to build on that. You're not just building on today. You're building for tomorrow. You're building for the next month, the next year. And so that is critical to be able to harness,
right?
Because if you have to leave, you want to make sure that whoever who's going to replace you understand what it is to be a leader, has the virtues of a leader.
Right,
understands what it is to be in that position, and that position is really about serving the needs of others. That's
right.
a critical thing, right? So sometimes we think that, okay, well, if this manager leaves or whatever, we're just gonna get somebody else. It doesn't just work like that.
Yeah, right?
It doesn't. And I always say that the higher up you're in an organization, or the higher or the more demanding your position is, the more important it is to be emotionally intelligent.
Yeah.
Right? It's not about your IQ anymore. It's not about the fact that you can run through a spreadsheet in less than a second.
Yeah.
It's not about, you know, it's not that. When you're in that position, it's about your emotions, understanding who you are, understanding how your personality and who you are affects others around you. Because that's the thing. They fail to realize that who they are as a person affects the people around them. Now, when you have a leader who is not emotionally intelligent, who doesn't understand who he is or who she is, then that person can be so offensive to others without even knowing, because that person doesn't understand who they are.
Right.
Their emotions and being aware of them, of themselves.
Mm.
And that's critical.
I said to an
executive member of mine a couple of years ago, I said, you know, as a CEO, as a GM, it's not about your IQ. It's about how you work with people. This is what will determine your success as a leader.
Yeah.
So your team members are not really, you know, because you as a leader, you're hiring people with the right skill as well to get the job done. So you're not focused about what skill you have. They're focused about how you inspire them, about how you lead them, and about how you help them. Those things are critical.
That is it. Because I think one of the things that we forget in leadership positions, or one of the things that some leaders do forget, is that it's not about you. Exactly. So you got the role, you got the role you wanted, but recognizing that the role you wanted requires you to serve other people, you know,
like
it's not about you, you know?
And that's the other thing. You know, I've heard managers, you know, make comments similar to, you know, they have to understand who I am. You know, they have to know who I am. They have to know the type of person. And, you know, when you hear that, especially if it doesn't sync well with your spirit, it affects you. And that's what leaders need to understand. Your team member, it's not about your team members understanding you and find a way to work with you. You have to understand them because you need them to follow you.
Mm.
That's the most critical thing. If you want your team to follow you and to follow where you lead, you need to understand them to get them to be inspired by where you lead. It's not the other way around. Because I think what persons tend to forget, again, is that they are the ones who are implementing your vision.
So
just imagine you have a vision that, you know, in 5 years, maybe you would be the most sought out company or whatever it may be. And it looks brilliant on paper, but you're not the one doing it. So how do you then get your team to fulfill that vision if they can't follow your lead?
Impossible. That's so powerful, Kim. And I feel like we could talk about this far.
We'll have to do a part two.
But yeah, like I feel like we need to do a part two, honestly. But like, what's your thoughts generally on, or should I put it this way? So taking all that aside, mm-hmm. where does Kim see herself in 2040? Like what is?
Oh my god!
Is there any forward thinking? You know, we talk about succession planning and all these different things in HR. What is Kim's plan?
Wait, 2040. Okay, so let me just first say, knock on wood, if I am around.
You, what you mean? You can be around
in 2040. But taking into consideration what I'm most passionate about. Well, we know that I'm passionate about HR, but I'm also very passionate about mental health.
Right.
So I see myself in a position where, again, I'm serving others. That to me will never change.
Right.
Right. And everything that I have amassed, everything that I have experienced, the journey that I'm on. And I think we all go through that journey to be able to tell a story, to be able to help somebody else. And that's the other thing that we were speaking about earlier on, our purpose in life.
Right.
You know, what is our purpose on earth? So I also think as well that one of my purpose has been through leading HR, right? Because through HR, I have been able to change so many lives.
Right.
I have been able to change so many lives positively. So I think that's one aspect of it. But on a more global scale, I want to be able to reach people, not just in the Caribbean or in Miami, but throughout the world. Like, how do I give of myself with what I know, with what I have been taught, with what I've learned? Because so many people out there are crying for help. And as we said before, are not speaking about it. And mental health is a significant thing. Now, the misconception with mental health is that when persons hear mental health, they think, oh my gosh, and this person it means that the person is bipolar or schizophrenic or whatever. But mental illness is so all-encompassing. And so mental illness could just be that the person is suffering from anxiety, is having panic attacks, is nervous. You know, but the thing is, because there is this taboo with regards to mental health, persons are not speaking up.
Right.
Right. And I believe that, you know, our best lives are lived through our thoughts, what we tell ourselves.
Mm.
And so how could persons live their best lives if they're tormented with thoughts, like negative thoughts, that get them to think that they can't live their best lives?
Mm.
And I know it exists because I have spoken to persons who, you know, for whatever reason, they don't want to speak about it. And then after having a conversation with them, you know, it's just some simple things. Alien, it's just about having a conversation, as you said before, being that support and just listening to somebody to change their view of something. Mm. Because the things we think of the most is what propels our success or our failures in life.
That's it.
Right?
That is it.
It's critical. And because I know that, I want to be able to tap into that because it's something that's missing. People are not speaking. People are not saying anything, but it exists. It exists. I have this saying that we live our most beautiful lives in our mind because that's where it starts.
That's powerful.
Yeah, that's where. So for persons who aren't able to travel or visit different cultures or whatever it may be, our best lives are lived in our mind. That's where it starts.
That's where it starts.
So who we become is based on the things that we think of the most. So if we're thinking of negative thoughts, if we're thinking of limiting beliefs, we will never be able to. Guess what? That's what we attract to us. But if we're thinking of more positive things about where we want to be, about our life, about, then we attract more of that. And the other thing I want to mention as well, and I think it's critical for people to understand, is that a thought leads to a feeling, and that feeling leads to an action, right? So if my thought is that I am ugly, then I get a bad feeling about that because I'm ugly. So I'm feeling that, oh my gosh, people, you know, there are people out there who won't like me. There are people out there who hate me. And then how do I act? I stay home. I stay home, right? And so the more I think something and the more I feel it, it's like a domino effect. So if I feel that way and I act that way, then more thoughts come into my mind that tells me, hey, you are really ugly. You really need to stay home. Right? And then over time, those thoughts mushroom into other issues, like mental issues. And that's why mental illness is so huge and so multifaceted, because it's those very thoughts that changes our minds and our feeling and changes the patterns of our brain. And so our brain over time changes because of what we feed our brain. Right?
Do you think though leaders have a responsibility to their teams in this regard? Like, how far does mental health become a leader's, I don't want to say necessarily responsibility, but becomes part of
how
they lead, you know?
Yeah, I think leaders need to be aware of it.
Right.
You see, once you are aware of something, then you know what you must do to change it. You know what you have to do so it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Now, I wrote an article on that exact thing. Mm-hmm. Mental health, I think it's important that leaders understand how critical being aware of mental health is in the workplace.
Yeah.
Because there are so many issues that happen as a result of mental health. You know, you have issues with productivity. You have issues with effectiveness. You have issues with efficiency. You know, there's a whole spectrum of issues. You know, one example is that somebody comes in late every single day. And then you might think, well, this person is just, you know, who they are. They're always tardy. They're, you know, they're not serious. You know, this person has an attitude and this person. Only to realize that when you really dig deep into it, it has nothing to do with productivity. That person is going through some issues at home.
Yeah.
Right, that's causing them to be late, whether it may be financial issues, whether it may be a divorce or a breakup or an issue with their child. But that person will not tell you. And so what we have seen through statistics is that employees will lie, right? They might fabricate the truth and say, well, it's some other issue that people think is a mental issue, again, because of that taboo. But statistics have also shown that employers lose millions of dollars every single month because of some mental issue in the workplace, right? You may see a team member at his or her desk and he looks as if he's doing an okay job, but you notice something different about him, right? Maybe he looks a bit disheveled. Maybe he's spaced out. You know, those sort of things. They're always clues, you know.
Right.
And so if we have to speak about it, we're going to go into so many different things.
I know, but it's so fascinating because I think we often don't make the linkage leading team members and being mindful of their mental well-being and how you can also create a culture where their mental well-being is at the center of how we develop a productive team, you know?
Exactly. Now, let me give you one example where that's mm-hmm. concerned regarding mental issues. So again, when we spoke about leaders need to understand that, you know, the employees come first and they need to treat employees like individuals and care for them, support them. When you're a leader who has not understood those elements, right. And understood how your personality and attitude affects others, mm-hmm. you tend to do things and say things that affects your team members' mental health. Right? Mm. So it may be that you're shouting at that person. It may be that you're saying to this person they're not worth it and they're slow and they're causing issues for you, and you know, that sort of thing. We don't understand how impactful our words have
right.
on a person's mental health. And that is so crucial. The things that we do and the things that we say can affect persons to the point of view that we created mental issues for them.
Yeah, because as you put it, you're almost planting that seed of thought
exactly.
that translates into the feeling and then the action.
Correct.
You know?
Correct. So if my leader, who in my view is, you know, the person who's supposed to lead me, if that person sees in me somebody who's worthless, somebody who can't get the job done, if I already have a weak personality, I'm going to ruminate on that. All I'm going to tell myself over and over, I'm not worth it. I'm not worth it. I'm not worth it. Oh my gosh, I'm not worth it. And then it's that internal conversation that we have that nobody sees, right? Nobody sees it but us. But it's happening. And over time, we create employees who are more unproductive. Employees right. who create more issues because we have started or continued the problem. Of mental issues.
Wow.
Right? And that's the thing. It's, you know, when you're working with people, there are so many things that you have to think of. That's why I said leadership is a beautiful position to be in. It's
yeah.
a unique position because you're changing lives. But as a leader, you need to understand how you're changing those lives. Right? Because you could change those lives for the good and also for the bad.
Bad, yeah.
Right.
I think that's the caveat of leadership, because leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. And yeah. influence could be bad or good, you know?
Exactly.
So is really exactly. positioning yourself as a leader. How do I want to influence? If I want to influence positively, then there's a certain way I need to be and adjust my personality and be mindful exactly. of person's well-being and all these different things, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Now, I speak of those things because I have gone through some examples and only to realize after speaking to somebody, it's something that their boss said to them, right? And over a period of time, it has caused so much distress that person, one, didn't want to come to work.
Wow.
That person, two, when they came to work, they were just there. They were just a body. Right, their body was there, but their mind was, they weren't mentally present, right? And that leader might be there saying, but you know, here we go again, you know, this person is so unproductive, this person needs to go, I need to terminate this person, not realizing that they were, or he or she was the reason why
behind all of it, yeah.
It's you know, when I think of that, when I think of leadership, and I'm, you know, persons in leadership growth, you know, they're in a leadership position, it comes with this, it comes with that. That's not what it is. It's not just about the books.
Yeah.
You're in that position to serve. So how will you serve?
So do you see your role primarily as a professional? Like, I know you've worked in different spaces, but do you see your role as helping to build up other leaders, or do you see yourself as the leader who influences them, or both?
It's a bit of both.
Okay.
Actually, it's a bit of both. You're influencing, but you're also building persons.
Building persons.
Right.
Up.
It's mm-hmm. it's not more of one and less of the other. It really is a blend. And it's really what it calls for. At the time, you in either space, you're influencing.
Yeah, that's
it. You're influencing, and so that influence had better be positive.
That's it. Oh my gosh, Kim, this has been truly amazing, honestly. And I feel like we've said so much, but so little at the same time, because there's so much that we could talk about.
Yes.
So indeed, just indeed. To start to wrap up.
Yeah.
My any final thoughts? Anything, if you could share any thought to those who are listening about what importance it is to have an understanding of leadership, what would that one thought be?
So to wrap up what I have said, I'll still stick with the fact that as a leader, you're in a unique position to serve. That is the calling as a leader. It's nothing to do with the seniority of the position, nothing to do with the perks, but in that position, you're serving others to make a meaningful difference. I think that's the one thing I want persons out there to understand. What difference are you making and how are you serving? When you look back on your stint as a leader, can you truly say that you have made an impact? Can you really say that you have served others and made a meaningful difference? That those people can then go out there and make a meaningful impact? Because that's what it is. You make that impact, you teach others so that those persons can then go out there and teach others. That's a quintessential thing about leadership. You're training persons, and you might even train them to be better than you.
Yeah, that's
but
it.
You're training them to go out there and to be better people and to make a difference, a meaningful difference.
I think that's the perfect place to wrap up, because it's in the understanding that not only is leadership not about you, but putting your mindset into the frame of mind that it's about serving others and truly creating impact, not only for them, because it is that understanding that it doesn't stop with those who you've served, but it continues as a ripple effect to others they will serve.
Exactly.
And that's the beautiful thing about this. Thank you so much, Kim. I feel like your input, especially regarding human resources, has been absolutely valuable. I know someone will take this knowledge and run with it. But more than that, I feel like so much came out in terms of mental health and well-being, leadership, understanding women's role or women's part in this, but also kind of learning the essence of what is required to truly align the vision of any entity with the talent and the personalities that fit into that culture. So thank you so much for that, Kim.
It was a pleasure, and we need to do this again, but it was an
absolute course,
pleasure.
Yes, we need to do part series of this, because I feel like there's so much more we could talk about. But for now, that has been Lead Her Shift. We have been running this episode. Another dynamic woman, Kim, has been amazing. Our self-made HR professional from doing big things around the world, and I want to thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.